press conference following the 2010 November meeting of the Bishops of England and Wales at Hinsley Hall in Leeds. Question and answer session. First of all, the Apostolic Constitution, Anglicanorum Chaetibus. Bishop Alan Hopes was asked about the numbers of Anglicans joining the Ordinariate. The first question was a threefold question. 1. There are 5 bishops joining. Are you expecting any more? 2. Is it true 50 Anglican clerics are joining? And 3. Can you give us any idea how many lay Anglicans are coming in and how many groups are joining?
Well, I think in answer to those three questions, I can only tell you that we know that 5 bishops are coming into the Ordinariate. They're the only people who've actually indicated that they're going to do so. So I can't really give you any answer about the numbers. But of course there will be. I mean, we expect a number of groups to come across with their clergy. I think at the moment, I think there are about 30-odd groups that will be set up in the initial establishment of the Ordinariate. And I think, yes, about 50 clergy will be joining them.
How large is each group?
That I can't tell you, and I can say that quite categorically. So,
Simon, you know, people have expressed interest, but the only decisions that have been publicly made are the 5 bishops, and we cannot make decisions for other people. They have to make their decisions. Now, while they've expressed interest, and that's fine, but they're the only ones we know who have actually publicly said, this is what I'm going to do, and have acted on that decision. But the expectation is there, as Bishop Alan has explained.
I was just wondering about the ordinary. Will the ordinary be chosen by the... Who will choose the ordinary? Will he come out of the Catholic Church? And will he be temporary until there will be enough people to vote for an ordinary in the Ordinariate?
I can only tell you that the ordinary will be appointed by the Holy Father, and that name will be announced when the Ordinariate is established, again by the Holy Father.
Thank you.
And I don't think there's any prospect that an ordinary would be elected by the members of the Ordinariate at any point.
I was just trying to clarify.
Okay. Yes. And do I need the microphone?
There it is.
Just picking up on this quote which says the clergy that come across the Catholic Church will enrich the spiritual life of the Church. Looking at comments by Dr. Owen Williams in The Week, where he talked about parishes that maybe can't process because of the launch of this group, how guilty do you feel that your church will benefit while the Anglican Church will lose out?
I think you have to get this in the broader perspective. As we said very clearly in this statement, this is a response to requests. And it's very interesting that yesterday, speaking in Rome, Archbishop Rowan said he did not view this as an aggressive act. So I don't feel guilty. This is a response to requests. And I think you have to be very sensitive to the point at which people arrive in their lives when they have a profound conviction about where and how they must live their Christian discipleship. And it's out of respect for that imperative of conscience that all of this takes place. And again, if you look at the words that Archbishop Rowan used in Rome yesterday, he talked about with his 2 suffragan bishops how much he talked through these matters with him. And while he said he regretted this, he said, they go with my prayers and blessings. So this is not a process of rivalry or competition between our 2 churches. And indeed, we believe that mutual strength is very important, because we have a shared mission, because we have a shared task. We are not in competition over the task of trying to bring the gospel to this society. And at the same time, we are planning a continuation of our series of joint meetings with Anglican bishops, bishops of the Church of England. We will meet again for a couple of days in April, so that our mutual cooperation and deepening communion continues as well.
Okay, just ask one more question. What would be your message to the parishes that do lose budget?
That I hope they will understand, that they will respect the decision that their clergy have come to, and maybe those who go with their clergy, and that they will understand it as sensitively and as profoundly as their Archbishop, the Archbishop of Canterbury, does.
Hi, Ed Thompson from Church Times. Tony, have there any decisions been made regarding the provision of buildings for groups who join the urban area? Church of England has made very clear that the properties belong to them. If not, when will a decision be made as the property says?
I think you'll understand that really those decisions have to be made once we know where the groups are going to be. And they'll be made locally rather than, I mean, there'll be the decisions will come out of the local discussions rather than from the top.
So there'll be local arrangements like now where the church and others' nomination meets in a building.
It could be. Yes, it could be. Yeah.
I think, obviously, it depends on the situation, depends on the disposition of churches anyway. But we absolutely respect the ownership of property.
Absolutely.
You know, we're not seeking to, as it were, acquire property through this at all. And in fact, I think from our point of view, the simpler route is the best. And the simpler route is that those who are becoming Catholics use our Catholic churches. Ruth?
Apologies for being late. There's been indications about church sharing, so that it just might go under the umbrella of the local LEPs. Would that give you cause for concern over things like possibly illicit shared communion? And would you rather they came out into Catholic churches and remained in Anglican churches, you know, which has been suggested even by Rowan Williams yesterday as a possibility?
Well, again, I think these are decisions to be made in each locality. It depends, I would suggest, on the availability of churches. I think our preference is for the simplest solutions. And the simplest solutions are probably that those who come into full communion with the Catholic Church use the Catholic Church. But each situation has to be looked at as it emerges.
Go on, Ruth.
Can you just clarify, the ordinary doesn't have to be a Catholic bishop, does he?
Well, I don't know about your use of the word Catholic. The ordinary certainly is a Catholic. But the ordinary doesn't have to be a bishop. It is within church law, as Peter will tell you, quite proper for a priest who is not a bishop to exercise ordinary jurisdiction. And that's all the word means, that he exercises ordinary jurisdiction. So, no, it doesn't have to be an ordained bishop. That's very clear in the constitution and the norms that were laid down a year ago. Am I right, please?
Absolutely. So he will be a Catholic.
Yes.
Because that's what they're doing. They're becoming, they're coming into full communion with the Catholic Church. So, I mean, when you're talking about shared churches and confusion, when they celebrate Mass, Catholics who are born and bred Catholics like me could go to their Mass and I'm in full communion with them, they're in full communion with me.
But isn't there something in the document which says that Catholics who are born and bred Catholics actually can't join the ordinary?
No, they can't join the ordinariate. They can't sort of say, right, I'm a member of the ordinariate now. They have to remain within their own diocese.
But they could go and could go to those services.
Yes,
and this is not a ritual church that is being established. So it's not as if the rite defines the ordinariate. So any Catholic can go to any mass anywhere. But where you belong, so whose jurisdiction you come under, is either a diocese or the ordinariate, and those who are already under the jurisdiction of a bishop who's baptised Catholics cannot join the ordinary, cannot switch jurisdiction.
A laity who say they move house and they're
well, they become diocese are territorial, that's the point.
Yeah. So they would have to remain under the jurisdiction of the Catholic diocese?
Yes.
Even if they every week attended the ordinary?
Yes. 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 Yes.
And again, fine on the tablet. Is it clear yet? Well, when I spoke to Bishop Malcolm McMahon about the ordinary, he suggested that you would lead it at least temporarily while it was being established. Is that no longer the case?
Well, let me save Alan from his embarrassment. I think you'll have to wait till early December to know the answer to that question.
January.
Yeah. Because it is a choice of the Holy Father.
Yes.
Has it become clear yet what sort of place this person will have on the Bishop's Conference?
They will be a member of the Bishop's Conference. And while our constitution doesn't allow for this eventuality because we never foresaw it, they will be a full participating member, I'm sure.
Okay. And when in your document you talked about the reception of priests as deacons and then as Catholic priests, what liturgy will you use? Will you be able to use the existing liturgy, or is new liturgy needing to be devised to recognise this unusual path that the Church will take?
They'll be ordained, not received as Catholic deacons and priests, and they'll be ordained in the existing Catholic liturgy. Yeah. There is some idea that there may be an Anglican usage in the ordinariate for those who wish to use such a liturgy, but for the most part they'll probably use the existing Catholic liturgy.
Okay, and finally, is it any clearer what the Anglican patrimony will amount to in practice? Is it that churches will be using the
book of prayer, or exactly? This is the question that is most intriguing. And again, Archbishop Rowan referred to it yesterday, and again in the quotation that we give you from the Holy Father on our page. This, I think, lies at the heart of the prospect of this ordinariate as, in the Pope's phrase, a prophetic gesture. But the thing about a prophetic gesture is you don't see it in all its details now. It's sensing something. And the Pope's point is very important. He says that through this ordinariate, both the Church of the Anglican Communion and the Catholic Church will grow in a practical appreciation of each other's riches. And because that will happen, that will be part of the way the two communions as a whole grow together. And in that sense, he believes it will point the way forward for us. Now, what are the riches? Well, they're not to do so much with bricks and mortar. They are to do with patterns of personal devotion. They are to do with what each of us regards as suitable spiritual reading. They are to do with how we approach the fathers, how we approach some of the traditions of faith. They are to do with our sense of mission, because often clergy in the Church of England have a much broader sense of mission than us traditional Catholics do. They are to do with patterns of church governance as to where there are consultative bodies and how they work. So I think in saying that this ordinariate is a prophetic gesture, what the Pope is saying, and as I say, Archbishop Rowan reflected it yesterday, is that we will learn more about each other in practice through this, and that will serve our wider purpose of full visible communion.
Church governance, an intriguing point. Does that mean to say that there will be more lay involvement or devolved power?
Well, if you look at the constitution and the norms for the apostolic ordinary, which I'm sure Father Marcus would happily provide you with a copy of, then they do put in place a pattern of consultative bodies which the ordinary is expected to use, which do not exist at present in Catholic diocese.
But that's what I mean, it's the implication in time that this might rub off on the mainstream Catholic Church. And
that's what the Pope is open to.
Archbishop?
Just to take you back to
American magazine. Just a question about formation. The lay people who have begun their formation, the clergy who will be receiving formation next year, and indeed bishops, from whom have they received the instruction in formation? Where have they done so? And is there any one of you or particularly a priest have been assigned to the task of forming them. In fact, to sneak in down that line.
Who is the them? Is the them related to the clergy?
Well, are both actually. Yes. I'm interested really in how both are going to be formed next year. And by whom?
I'll try and answer those if you can repeat them as I go along. The first thing is to say that those who are contemplating this move have actually been encouraged to begin their preparation already. They started off middle of September, beginning of October. They've been studying, of course, the Evangelium course, which looks at Catholic doctrine, Catholic ethical matters, prayer, scripture, and so on. And they've been working through that solidly each week. So their clergy have been doing that with them, we hope. And that will continue until the beginning of Lent. And then in Lent, already a course is being put together to help them with their sacramental preparation for reception into the Church at Easter. That goes for the clergy as well. The clergy will have an intense formation period from the beginning of Lent right up to Pentecost. And our seminaries have been asked to put forward a course for that. But the course has been worked out with the CBF in Rome, and the continuing formation will be based on that document. That's for the clergy.
The role of the seminaries here, is it understood that they will actually go to the seminaries to receive this formation?
Yes.
And will all seminaries be involved if there's a demand in those areas, or are there particular seminaries?
We're in conversation with all the seminaries.
Ruth? Archbishop, you mentioned the constitution of the Bishops' Conference. Are you going to have to rewrite that? And how do you feel about the possibility of having a married man with children sitting as a full member of your bishop's conference?
Well, thank you, Ruth. I mean, I personally don't find talking to married men with children in the least bit difficult. but that apart, you're wrong, because... Oh, no, you're not. No, you're not. You're quite right. No problem. No problem. I was thinking he would be a bishop. There won't be a married bishop.
No, but you said earlier that he would be a member of the
Bishop's Conference. You're quite right. I have no problem with that at all.
Would he have voting rights?
That's why I was slightly vague. I don't see why not. Sure. Though our constitution.
Yes, he does.
He does.
But any other bishops who convert could be invited to join the Bishop's Conference. They won't have.
So just the ordinary would have.
Only the ordinary have the right to vote.
Is this not married bishops through the back door?
No, it's not, because he's not a bishop.
If he's married, he's not a bishop.
There's no back door bishops, he's not a bishop.
But he's on the Bishops' Conference.
But that's all right. That's all right.
Do you expect it to grow significantly over time and to a state where, as one person predicted a week or so ago, we'll be talking about thousands of members rather than hundreds? And secondly, said that the bishops were responding very generously, I think is the word that you used, to the clergy who are coming in. Is there yet a sense of whether or not the Anglican clergy who move into the ordinary will have their current rates of pay and allowances matched by the Catholic Church, or will they all have to have a big pay cut?
In answer to your first question, I don't know. We just have to wait and see. This is something new, we've not been here before. The decisions are not ours. We are responding to what the Holy Father's asked us to do, and I think we're doing it in a very open and generous way. But decisions are with those who at present are in the Anglican Communion or on its edge, and they have to make up their minds. But we are open to whichever way this develops, whether it develops into something significant or whether over time the groups that come kind of just naturally absorb themselves into Catholic dioceses. We just have to wait and see. With regard to your second question, the constitution is quite clear that the clergy of the ordinariate are the responsibility of the ordinariate, and that's true financially as in every other way. Now that's very difficult for the ordinariate as it gets started. So we have been looking to gather together from one or two contributors and trusts a fund so that the ordinariate can get going. And the diocese, we have agreed that we will put in £250,000 from the diocese into the ordinariate so that it can begin to fulfil some of those responsibilities. But we will do this together to begin with, because, you know, the ordinariate is part of the Catholic community in England and Wales. But the precise and final outcome of your second question depends on the ordinariate.
Can I just add something to re-emphasise what I said earlier, that where these groups are going to be formed, the local diocese will respond generously to with regard to housing and looking for ways in which they can be sustained at the beginning anyway financially.